Not so many books. Okay? Only a bookstore. Thanks. We're good to go? We're on? Yeah, okay. So we're continuing the beginning of the third chapter of Megillas Rus. And there's a very daring plan that's unfolding here. In fact, this is really quite shocking. Just to recap, Rus has been frequenting the fields of Boaz for quite some time now, taking care of her mother-in-law and ensuring that they can keep body and soul together. Without food, there's no future. And Naomi is worried about Ruth's future, not just staying alive, but actually getting married and rebuilding her life. So she has this plan, this very odd, it seems, plan to have Ruth put Boaz in this compromising position, and he's going to have to make some kind of decision at that point. And last week, or our last class, we talked about this in detail. Why did Naomi choose such a radical plan, and what is really behind this, how we should possibly try to understand this? So today's class is going to be a continuation of that, as well as a detailed study of Pasuk Beis, of the second verse of this third chapter. So in the previous class, in addition to the overview, we went into the details of Pasuk Aleph, Vatomer Naomi Chamoisa. Why does it say Naomi, her mother-in-law? We kind of know that. Why does it say Biti? Why does it say my daughter? And why do we use the terminology Avakesh Lach Manoyach? What's with the rest? I'm seeking for your rest. Asha Yitav Lach. We explain this in detail. Verse 2 continues with the narrative of this daring plan. Va'ata, and now, Haloi Voyaz Moidaitonu. And now, says Naomi, Boaz is our relative. He's our kinsman. Asher hayis es na'aroisav. That's the very same one whose maidens you have been with. He's our relative. His maidens that you have been with. Hine hu zoira es goyren ha'sa'irim. He is going to be winnowing the barley tonight. Halayla. So therefore, because he's going to be winnowing the barley, because he's a relative, because you've been with his young maidens, that's why you should get dressed up and come and kind of surprise him in the middle of the night. So the obvious questions that have to be understood about this verse start at the very beginning. What does it mean, va'ata? And now? But now he became a relative? Boaz and Machlon, this is Ruth's erstwhile husband, were first cousins. Their fathers are brothers. Come from the same bloodline, came from the same family. This has been discussed numerous times. We have, in numerous occasions in this study, in this book, mentioned the relationship between Naomi and Boaz. And for some reason, this verse begins with, and now. Really? Now? What's the end now? And Haloi, after all, Voaz Moedai Tonu. He's, after all, our relative. Oh, so that's why you should come and freak him out in the middle of the night? if it's your relative, why don't you do things normally? How does that introduce this verse altogether? And then we have a business with the maidens. Asher Hayis Na'aroisav. You're with his young maidens. Well, so what? I mean, so yeah, you had some female employees, the people who are working over there. So you're with those female employees. They're for what? How does that make the case for anything? And hine hu zeira es ha-gerdin ha-sa'idim, he's going to be winnowing the barley, the harvest tonight. How is she so sure where he's going to be at night? She gets like an advance email of his schedule. This is the prime minister's office. They have to release the information to the public. How is Naomi even so sure of this? She's got and she has to say this. You should know there's going to be a winnowing. It's going to be a barley, and it's happening tonight. He's going to be there tonight. So obviously, this pasuk has to be understood, I'm going to suggest, on two levels. Number one, pshat, just to understand what is the simple meaning here. And number two, we have to return to our original question of what in heaven is going on over here and how these details make the case for the daring plan that Naomi wants Ruth to follow in order to change
the future, what tomorrow is going to look like. So let's start, first of all, with the vi'ata. What's the va'ata? What's the now? So clearly, the time to act is now. That's clearly what's being said. It's not, and now he's our kinsperson. Now he's our relative. He's always been our relative. Usually your relatives are your relatives when you're born. It didn't become a relative. There's been no marriage. There's been no change in the relative status. So, and now means now it's time to act. Why should we act? It's, and now, haloi, boyaz meidaitanu, boyaz is our relative, and asher ha'yisas na'araisav, and you're with his young maidens. So now is the time to act because he's our relative and because he's with our young maidens. How do we understand this pshat? How do we understand what that means? So first of all, what's now? What's happened now that didn't happen before? And we touched about this in the previous class. What's happening now? Now is the end of a harvest season. The barley ripens sooner, and therefore it gets harvested sooner. The wheat ripens later, and it gets harvested later. This is the harvest season. Now, in the harvest, there's a number of different stages, if you will. First, you have to actually cut the stalks, and at some point, the stalks and the seeds have to be removed. And then there's something called winnowing, in which the chaff, which is light, and the actual bulbs of or ears of corn or wheat which are, or barley are heavier. So what happens is you have these pitchforks, you throw it up in the air, and the chaff blows away, and what's heavier falls. And that way you create a pile or a garden, a granary of the harvest. And winnowing is done ever since farming. I mean, we have ancient hieroglyphic in Egypt or Nubia or other ancient African and Eurasian countries where winnowing is depicted in stone pictures on the wall. So we know winnowing is a very, very old thing. And it's talked about in the Torah, you know, one of the melechas of Shabbos, one of the things you're not allowed to do on Shabbos is perform acts of winnowing. It's a question whether that comes from separation. It's called Zoyre. What's behind it? So 3 months have passed. 3 months have passed. When did they arrive in Israel? Like a joggy memory, do you remember? They remembered on the second day of Pesach. They left after the Seder. Seder night, they left. They came on the second day of Pesach. 3 months have passed now. So 7 weeks later was Shavuot. Shavuot is past us by now. Now it is the 15th or 16th day of Nisan to Iyar, Iyar to Sivan, Sivan to Tammuz, high summer. Tammuz is the hot month, the summer month, the middle of the Kayetz, in the middle of time when lots of work has been done. The bulk of work is done up until the 15th day of Av, as the bulk of work is done. All harvesting basically winds down. There's another month left for heavy farm work. However, as we said, the barley gets harvested earlier. So this is halfway through the month of Tammuz. The barley has already been harvested. What's next? What's next is the winnowing. You'll also remember there's been a tremendous famine in the land of Israel. That's how this whole story began. What precipitated the abandoning of Israel by Elimelech, who was a great judge and a great leader of his people, with his wife Naomi and their sons Mahlon and Kilion, was the famine. People didn't have what to eat. Elimelech was afraid all of his wealth would be plundered by people who didn't have. So he wanted to run away, and that's a very sad and unfortunate story and narrative in and of itself. Now, things have gotten better. Prosperity has returned to the land of Israel. And we talked about this is the first good harvest. So it's the first good harvest, and it's a plentiful harvest. It's 3 months into the situation. Rus has now had the Yemeya Havchana, the days of separation between her previous status and between her new status. Now we said now is the time for Rus to get married. Now it's time. Now she's ready to make a move. So Naomi says now Boaz is our relative. So she's making the case as to why this might be the Shidduch. This might be the right. You know, so now is like now. It's 3 months have gone by, or now the harvest is completed. So now is a good time. So we should be able to move forward and start the process of finding you, so to speak, a husband. Now, Rashi. I think we should start with Rashi. Rashi says Moidatanu means Kroivenu. He's our relative. So a key component of the narrative is unfolding is the relationship between Naomi and between Boaz. He's our relative. That's part of the argument she's making. He's our relative. Okay. Hini hu zayra hamoitz.
This is the winnowing, getting rid of the what they call the vanturbel in Old French, or vanner in Old French. So this is how the chaff is going to get separated from the actual bulbs of corn, of barley. So she says, matter of fact, he knew who Zayres HaGerdin is going to be doing it halayla tonight, and therefore he's going to be there tonight. How do we know he's going to be there tonight? So Rashi says, Shahoya Hadur Parutz Bigneva, because this was a generation that unfortunately did not live in a particularly moral fashion. There were a lot of seedy and shady characters. And because there were seedy and shady characters, what would Boaz be afraid of? Be afraid of being robbed. People weren't honest. In Toronto, people don't usually lock their doors of the car, or at least they didn't. Right? I spent my teenage years in New York. Everybody locks the doors of their car in New York. You know why? Because it's New York. That's why. Because stuff happens there. When I first came to Toronto, very few people used to lock doors. I think a lot of people started locking the doors now. Toronto is not so beautiful like it was 20 years ago, right? People leave the house doors open. Somebody once told me, the nice thing about being Canadian is even the house door open. I don't know. That's not what the police say they're doing these days, right? So we take precautions because of the environment we live in. When people live in a place where they don't expect crime, they don't take precautions. They don't lock things up. They're not careful. They don't worry about it. But when society is lax and unlawful, then all of a sudden we have to take extra precautions. So Boaz is going to be taking a precaution. He brings home this tremendous harvest, and now the winnowing takes place. So after the winnowing, it's actually cash and carry. Now the merchandise is ready. What's Boaz afraid of when the merchandise is ready? He's afraid of being robbed. So what's he going to do? Well, he's going to hang out there tonight. He's going to stay there. And because the dar is baris b'gneiva, v'hu yoshem b'groinai, he's going to sleep in the warehouse. He's going to sleep in the granary. Lishmar groinai, to be able to guard or to watch his harvest. So this is very interesting because there's a gemara in Chulin, on that Tzadik Aleph Amud Beis, that says like this. Gemara in Chulin, page 91, side B, tells us that from this very verse, from Rus being told by Naomi, of Naomi's certitude, he won't be going out tonight. From this very verse we learn, from here we learn about somebody who is of refined spiritual character, literally a scholar. Shouldn't go out alone at night. Look, doesn't look right. People say, who knows what he was doing at night? Whether this applies today or not is a good question. Much has changed in society today. But once upon a time, certainly to take a walk in the middle of the night was suggestive of, let's just say, less than appropriate activities. So a Talmud Chacham should put himself above chashad. Nobody should be suspicious. If he's going to be in a situation where people say, oh, look at that. Look where Talmud Chacham's going. I wonder what he's doing. And then you know how rumors start and stories grow a beard and so on and so forth. I'll tell you a funny story about stories growing a beard. When I went with the Prime Minister to Israel, so there was a fellow, we stopped in Cologne to refuel, go for Canada, takes the Prime Minister to Israel, they can't give him a normal plane, they give him an old military plane that gets re-outfitted to the Prime Minister's trip, there is no Air Force One in Canada, and they have to stop in Cologne for refueling. Okay, stop in Cologne, everybody's got to get off the plane. That's the rule, everybody gets off the plane, and the Prime Minister, according to federal law, is not allowed to leave the plane until everybody's off the plane. And there's RCMP on board, and they're the stewards and stewardesses, RCMP. So there's a guy sitting behind me, who I tried to get to put on film, but he was like absolutely adamant in the beginning. Later he changed. Now we put on film all the time now. And he said, I made a vow when I was 13 years old that I would never step foot on German soil. I'm not leaving the plane. And his wife said, if he's not leaving, I'm not leaving. And the police came. This is RCMP, armed guard. They said, you have to get off right now. It's federal law. He said, I'm not getting off this plane. I don't care. And he held onto the seat in front of me, and he said, I refuse to step on German soil. And I left the plane. I don't know what was going to, like, there was a scuffle. And I told somebody the story, because the point of the way I told the story to this person was, here's a Yid who was very far from his Yiddishkeit. Yeah, he had a bar mitzvah, but, Shabbos, Kashrus, was not on the radar. And yet, and here he perceived this to be something important, and his neshama just came out of full force. An hour later, when I asked him to put on tefillin, he refused. It took, I think, 3 days till he agreed to put on tefillin. Finally, outside the Knesset, we put on tefillin for the first time, maybe since his bar mitzvah. And then he softened up, and now he's
He's a beautiful Yid. He really is a beautiful Yid. And my point to this person was, here's how, you know, how Germany, just the name, the soil, it conjectures such images, such visceral reactions from Jewish people. This is just the conversation we had. It happens to be this person is a rabbi in Germany. A German-born, probably the first ordained German-born rabbi from after World War II. So last night, apparently, he spoke in San Diego. And the Chabad rabbi there in San Diego has a brother who's not observant, who I know, and occasionally we meet and I put on film with him. And I have a whole story with this guy. I met this guy when my Zevi was born in the hospital. He had had a baby at the same time. So like, and then I met him years later. He sends me a Facebook message this morning. A speaker yesterday said that Prime Minister Harper came out and personally asked a person to get off the plane, and that's when he went off the plane. Do you know anything about the story? So I messaged him back this morning, like, yeah, I was there. I said, I didn't see the Prime Minister coming to speak to him, and I'm pretty sure he didn't get off the plane. I said, who's the speaker? So he sends me the flyer. Who is the speaker? It's this friend of mine that I know from Facebook and from my lectures from 15 years ago before he was observant. He's a rabbi now, and he goes around speaking about Jewish life in Germany, and he's actually in San Diego speaking last night. And he heard the story from me. So he tells the story about, quote, a Holocaust survivor who refused to get off the plane until the prime minister came and spoke to him. So I messaged the guy back. I said, is it so-and-so? I sent back his name. And he says, I said, call him and ask him the story straight. He calls it back and says, okay, you're right. He's not a Holocaust survivor. He's an English boy. He didn't get off the plane in the end. The RCMP was angry, and they came and blocked. And actually, it said MP Mark Adler was he also didn't get off the plane, which I didn't know about. Okay, so here's a story that grew a beard. Literally, it's like a new story. It sounds so dramatic, a Holocaust survivor wouldn't get off, till the prime minister himself, he's not a Holocaust survivor. He didn't get off the plane in the end. The prime minister didn't come and speak to him. And I was the source of the story. He heard the story. He only could have heard the story from me, because there weren't many people on that plane. Right? So go figure how things spin out of control, right? And this is a perfect example. Hashgacha Pratis, this is like, you know, this morning's fresh baked roll. This is this morning's ridiculous story of how chshad, of how suspicion can happen. They'll say, oh, did you see? Something's going on over there. Yeah, so some rabbi he is. Look, I wonder where he was last night at 1 o'clock in the morning. And then the next person didn't hear, I wonder, did you hear where he was 1 o'clock in the morning? The next person already says, I saw him coming back from somewhere 1 o'clock at 2 o'clock in the morning. And then the character assassination continues. By the time the morning comes around, young people are saying, I'm going to sin because the rabbi sinned. So this is the Gemara says. The Gemara says, Al Yetzi Yechidi. Don't put yourself in a compromised situation. It doesn't matter whether there's no suspicion whatsoever. It's the furthest thing from your mind. It doesn't matter. You need to be above any kind of suspicion, especially if you're a person who's looked up to, a person who represents Torah, Talmud Chacham. You have to be exceedingly careful, go to the nth degree, never to be in a compromising position. That's the Gemara in Chulin says. Where does the Gemara in Chulin know this from? Because Naomi knew that Boaz wouldn't be walking at night by himself. She was absolutely certain. And she said, he's going to be there tonight. So here's the problem. And the author of a fairly modern commentary on Megillah Esros asked this question. He doesn't give an answer. He says, this Gemara and the Rashi here seem to be contradictory. Because the Gemara tells us, how did Naomi know that Boaz wouldn't be out in the street? Because he was a Talmud Chacham. And Mikan LaTalmud Chacham, Shalei Yetzi Yechidi Belaila. Because he has to be above suspicion. And he'll be suspicious. Rashi tells us that the reason that he's there is because the Dur was part of his big neighbor, because the people were going to steal. Which one is it? How did Naomi know? And anyway, how could Rashi argue with the Gemara? It seems to be an outright contradiction. So I thought about this for a long time last night. I was preparing this class. It didn't make sense to me. How could Rashi contradict the Gemara? And then it hit me. It makes perfect sense. But in order to answer the question, I'm going to ask you another question. Rus, in the end, manages to get into the granary, the warehouse, where Boaz is. He goes to sleep. She uncovers his feet and wakes him up. And then, amazingly, things don't go as they could have gone. And we'll talk about that in a minute. But so Rus wakes him up. How did she wake him up? By rolling the blanket back from his feet. So if I was a thief, I'm not a thief, Baruch Hashem, but if I was a thief, and I had this urge to steal some freshly harvested barley, and I'm going to come to the granary, where the barley is being stored. What's the chances of me uncovering the owner's feet before I take the barley?
Zero.
Zero. That's the last thing I'm doing is uncovering his feet. In fact, what am I going to do? I'm going to uncover my feet. I'm going to leave my shoes outside, and I'm going to tiptoe around, load up a sack of barley, which doesn't jingle, doesn't make noise. Load up that sack of barley, and I'm going to be out of there. And Boaz will be no wiser in the morning when he wakes up and he says, "Oh, how did this happen to me? How did somebody come in? If you're worried about thieves, just lock the door." I mean, isn't that a simple way to do it? Locks usually work. No, instead I'm going to sleep there. And what will you accomplish? Nothing. Because you could be sleeping. Even Rus has to do something to wake him up. Walking in doesn't wake him up. She actually has to uncover his feet and then sit there and say, "I hope this guy wakes up now." And he does wake up. The whole thing doesn't make any sense. How will Naomi know he'll be there at night? Of what help will it be if Boaz is there at night? He's an octogenarian. He's 80 years old, by the way. If you ask me, I'm just a simple guy. But if you ask me, if I'd be 80 years old and worried about my harvest, I wouldn't sleep in the granary. You know what I would do? I would hire someone. I would hire like a kid who's 18 years old and give him a club. Because it's Canada, you can't have a gun. I give him a club. If it's Arkansas, I give him a gun. Very simple. That's what I would do. No, instead, the 80-year-old man is going to sleep on the floor. It's meshuga. I'd rather get a good night's sleep. Steal my barley if I want to steal my barley. The whole thing doesn't make any sense. And Naomi is so sure. Like, how does she know Boaz that well to know? She hasn't seen him. They haven't even spoke since she returned. My Zaydi, Allah Shalom. He was a very spirited, Lebedika person, my Zaydi Hecht. So in the last years of his life, he really, like, you know, the years started to get to him. After he hit 85, 86, he really started to get old. But I remember up till that time, I'd ask him, "Zaydi, how you doing?" He would say, like, "I don't know. I was never 86 before." That was like his common refrain. So how does Naomi know what Boaz will do as an 80-year-old man? How does she know? She knew him when he was 70. She knew him when he was 65. A lot of years have passed by. So she's absolutely certain, I know he'll be there. He's going to sleep on the floor to stop the thieves. When it doesn't even stop the thieves anyway. I mean, this has got to make sense. It doesn't make any sense right now. It sounds ridiculous. Naomi is like she's imagining things. She speaks with such confidence and certitude about things that don't seem to be that certain at all.
Maybe he did that every year.
Hasn't been a harvest for years. Mm-hmm. And the last time it was a harvest, she was there, he was 10 years younger. Maybe younger than that. Maybe he was 70 years old, a big strong guy, he held a stick. But you're right. Maybe he did do it every year. Hagufa kasha. Why would he do it every year? You know what? I'll tell you a little secret. If I was a rich man and I had big fields that were full of barley, I'm only 47. I also wouldn't sleep on the floor. And if I was afraid they're going to steal, I'll buy a big lock. And if I was still afraid, I'll get a guard. And if I was still afraid, I'll equip him with a dog. A rich man has to sleep on the floor to protect his own barley? Boaz is an extraordinarily wealthy person. He owns plantations and fields. He has hundreds of people working for him. I'll hire one of the kids. Let's say Naomi knew that he did this. It doesn't even make any sense. He sounds like a lunatic. And we talk about his sterling quality, his exceptional person that he was, his personality. Sounds like an idiot. And then, of course, this contradicts the Gemara. So here's what I think the pshat is. Who do you think was going to come and steal from Boaz? Who did he think is going to come and steal? Strangers? I don't think so. And I'll tell you why. Because Boaz would not guard just the area where the grain is. What would he guard? Guard all the fields. It's a property. It's an estate. You guard the farm. I wouldn't be surprised if there was a night watchman that used to walk around and make sure to secure the fields. Because it's not just if they're going to steal, they could steal things from the fields as well. There had to be some kind of night watch. If there was a generation that was a Dur Parutz, then there was people took care. Even till today, we have night people who have hired to watch at night. There's no camera, there's no alarm. You have watch people. And there couldn't be a lock. because it's out in the outdoors. Who is Boaz afraid of? I would like to suggest to you that Boaz was not afraid of strangers. You know who he was afraid of? His own workers. His own workers. Do you know that a significant portion of crime here in this city, I know this for a fact, is committed not by strangers, but rather by employees. Right inside. I know personally, not from my police involvement, just from being a rabbi in this community, I know of three people who were robbed in the numbers that exceed four figures. By the local people who worked for them. One by a secretary, one by an accountant, and one by a bookkeeper. That sounds like a joke. A secretary, a bookkeeper, an accountant. No, it's a real deal. It's a real deal. And in one of them, the fellow called me and he said, I just found out that my secretary took, I just figured out from the books. She's been writing checks to herself. What should I do? He says, should I call the police? So I worked through the issue with him. I said, okay, let's look at the possibilities. What's going to happen? But it's not important what I told him to do, but Baruch Hashem, what I told him to do was a good thing to do, and things did work out in the end. But this is a real fear. It's a real fear. I know somebody else who's a company, the bookkeeper was stealing money. Three people that I know of. I don't have my hand in everybody's pot. I'm not even a business person. It has got to be, this thing has got to happen very often. So if you can't trust your workers, what do you do? Well, you do it yourself. Like you can't. There's like the joke they tell of these two partners. One with partner, one on vacation, and his friend calls him on the cell phone. He says, "Harry, we had a break-in last night." He says, "Sam, just close the safe and stop it." This is Boaz is worried about. Boaz didn't have a partners. He's all by himself. So what would Boaz do to make sure that the workers wouldn't pilfer? What would Boaz do? He didn't leave. He stuck around that night. Now the winnowing would take place at night. And the commentaries tell us this is because you need wind to winnow. I don't know if winnow and wind come from the same word, but you need wind. Because what happens is the shaft is thrown up with a pitchfork, and the shaft gets blown away, and then the bulbs are heavier, they sink. So in Eretz Yisrael it says, the wind blows at night. That's why I remember, where did I see this? Maybe in the Malbim?
King David's harp.
King David's harp. I remember. Anyway, sometimes I have too many books. I don't remember where I saw it. But in one of these books that I have, it says clearly that the wind would blow in the evening in Eretz Yisrael. And because the wind would be blowing in the evening over there, that's why. Oh, here it is. Mamleya says it. Hatam shayazayra balayla is because the door was parutz. So that's why he stayed there. But he says, oitam, that when you have the sun beating down, it's not an effective time to do it. He says also because the wind was blowing. So he knows he has to do this at night. Who's he worried about? His workers. Okay, so then all the workers are finished and everybody goes home, Boaz should then go home. For this, the Gemara says, he couldn't go home at that point anymore because it's dark already. So that's why the Gemara in Chulin says, Mikan l'Talmud Chacham shele yetzi yechidi b'layla. This is how we know that a Talmud Chacham should go out at night. And that's how Naomi was 100% sure that Boaz would be there. Because Boaz was not in the granary sleeping on the floor because he was worried about his money. He was in the granary sleeping on the floor because he was worried about his reputation. That's why he stayed there. He slept on the floor because his reputation as a Talmud Chacham precludes him from going home late at night. Why did he stay late at night? Because he had to stay late at night. That was a business decision. But the sleeping on the floor wasn't to guard. How would sleeping on the floor help anybody from stopping to steal? The sleeping on the floor was because once he's there already, he couldn't leave. And if I'm right, I actually think I am, then this question of the Dinei Yitzchak falls away. It's not a question. And the seeming contradiction in Rashi and the Gemara in Chulin is now no contradiction. And actually the story makes sense now. Naomi knows that a normal person is there at night. She knows they winnow at night. She had plantations herself once upon a time. Her husband surely used to winnow at night. And probably her husband didn't come home at night. And she would wonder why. So she knew why. She says, I can't come home at night.
So she knew this, he's going to stay in the office tonight. Why? Because B, he's going to be there late. And once he's there late, he shouldn't go alone because he has to be above suspicion. So here, Naomi knew now makes perfect sense. That's why now is the time to act. Why? Because Boaz in his house, how's Ruth going to get undetected into Boaz's house? Houses have locks, houses have doors, houses have people. People, you can't. Who's going to walk into somebody's bedroom in the middle of the night and start uncovering his feet? Hi, it's Ruth. Would you like some coffee? How's that going to happen? So Naomi says, now is the only time. We must act now. It's perfect timing. There's a whole like kaleidoscope of events that are all coming together at this moment. The perfect storm. It's finished. 3 months have finished. So the Yimei HaFsaka are done. You came on Tezayin Nisa. Now it's Tezayin Tammuz. Perfect 3 months. And Boaz is in a good mood. Why is he in a good mood? Because he just, and which we need, he ate like an old person. And he had, this is what the Igeres Shmuel says. He says, now is the right time because Boaz is Sameach al Hayavul. He's feeling satisfied. You want to get something from somebody, when should you come to them? When they're in a bad mood or in a good mood? When they just got excellent news that the stocks went through the roof or whatever it was they were trying to do succeeded, or when things just now came in with the worst news, the blackest news, you lost everything. Oh, that's a good time to ask him for things. No, that's a terrible time to ask him for things, especially things which are outside the box. For an old person, say, leave me alone. I can't even think about it. You want me to talk about future? You want me to talk about big decisions? I don't even know if I have a roof over my head tomorrow. I don't know what we're going to eat next week. And you're making me crazy now with marriage plans? It's the perfect time. Because there's a beautiful Yavul, and everything is grown, and it's after the famine, and Boaz himself has had terrible tragedy in his own life. He lost his wife, he lost children. But the famine is over. You know, this is like how people are like in a good mood after the war. You speak to people, older people, they tell you like how things were after the war. Except Nebuch, poor Yidden, our poor grandparents and parents were sitting in DP camps after everybody was happy. Except we had nowhere to go. Right? And the British wouldn't let any Jews go into Israel because they were such wonderful, fantastic, loving people. Mm-hmm. And Jews who come to Israel, they'll lock them, put them in a detention center behind barbed wires again. Right? But normal people, after a war and after a famine and after difficult times, everybody's in a good mood. So this is the perfect storm. Naomi said, now we have to act. Everything is right now. And then you're going to ask about coming there at night. You ask about how this will look. So that's why Naomi says, and now he's our relative. So if he's our relative, the Al-Sheikh says, people are not going to ask, why is she going there? Why is she going there? She feels connected over here. This is the time when everybody's working. And she says, not only that, he's my detano. He's our relative. He's our relative. So the Al-Sheikh says, it's normal for you to want to go and see what's happening. It's normal for you to want to be, you see your relative success. Especially she was there all summer. She watched it all happen. It was like a big summer festival. Now is when you pull all the fish in. You're reeling on all the profit. And I said, At asher hoyis es na'ar Yosef. You were with his young ladies. You were like almost part of the company already. Even though you're a schnorrer and they were working. But still, it's normal. People say, oh, why is Rus here? Nobody would ask why Rus is here. There were hundreds of people there. It was a very busy night. This was a big night in Boaz's company. This is the big winnowing night. So people are there. There'll be hundreds of workers, a lot of your girlfriends, a lot of the people you know. So Rus will be there. Nobody will ask any questions why she's there. It won't be strange if she's there. She doesn't have any skin in the game. Does she own, so to speak, shares in the company? Well, yeah, she's related. She is related, right? She was married to his first cousin. So it's perfectly normal if there's, even though there's no gleanings to take, in winnowing, there's no halachas of poor people getting anything. She want to be there. It's a festive carnival night, you know. This is the night when it all comes together. Why wouldn't you want to be there? And that's why Naomi says, and he's going to be there. He's going to be there. Where's he going to be? He's going to be in a granary, in an area where they store grain, a storage area. The storage area, it's not going to be hard to get into. No locks in a storage area. He's there. He's, so to speak, turns the lights out at night, all the workers go home, and it's quiet. The perfect time for Rus to act. So now the verse makes, on a pshat level, makes perfect sense over here. The Igeres Shmuel adds something very interesting. He says, Naomi was also making the case for why this is a good shidduch. Now, I want to tell you something about shidduchim, about marriage. Certainly, not only in the ancient world, but until fairly recent times, much of what we consider to be normal in marriage, like romance and these feelings and being in love and so on and so forth, and people have to be married before being married, this is very modern ideas. And not only I'm not sure that marriages are not better for it, I know for a fact that marriages are worse off for it. Nobody is going to be able to convince me that the fact that we have well over 50% now percentage of divorce is only because divorce was hard once upon a time. Really, people were always unhappy. People always wanted to get divorced. You couldn't get divorced. It was a stigma thing. I don't buy that. You want to tell me that it's gone up 10 points because of that? I'll accept it. 20 points, it doesn't go up 50%. The numbers are through the roof. Divorce was once upon a time almost unheard of, and today it is more common than not. More marriages will end in divorce, significantly more marriages than will last. And that number climbs with each year. With each year. If chas v'shalom, things continue, I shudder to think of what the world's going to look like in a decade from now. And remember, it's like people with religious values that are keeping, if you took only the secular world, probably be like 75-80% already. That's crazy. That's mamash unbelievable. Yeah, today that's a new thing. There's a lady who wrote a book about it. Abolish marriage. Rahman al-Tsan. This is a touchy, painful subject for a different day. So I want to tell you about a story that I actually heard from the person. Had a very successful marriage. I'm talking about my wife's grandmother. Very successful marriage. She and her husband gave birth to and raised 7 children. All well-adjusted. Happy people. He's my father-in-law's mother. So I was first married, and we were here in the summer, and she was here. She would visit different children, and I like old people. I like to talk and hear all things. So I would sit and talk to her and hear all of her stories, and it was very interesting for me. So one of the stories I asked her about is, how did you meet the Zayda? How did you meet? He had recently passed away, my father-in-law's father. So how did you meet? They were very much far apart. They were like 10 or 12 years apart. He was much older than her. So I expected some kind of unusual story, like a story. She said, no. It's after the war. She was kind of raised by a single mother, and she left her mother and grandmother when the Nazis were coming. I don't even remember the name of the town in Russia. They were all slaughtered by the Nazis. The Nazis came in, the regular, before the trains and the gas chambers. This was a Hungarian Jewry. the Jews in Lithuania, Ukraine, White Russia, just shot, Babi Yar style. Babi Yar is famous because it was 100,000 Jews in 3 days, but this was all the Jews were killed. So they encouraged her to run away. She was a teenager. I think she was 16 or 17 years old. And she told me that the whole horror story, how she ran and the Germans bombed the train and the train blew up and she was running barefoot through the fields. the stories of survivors who didn't actually see the Nazi bayonets and guns, but, or the gas chambers that ran into the far eastern steppes of Siberia or Kazakhstan. So she survives the war like that. And then she comes out together with a wave of Hasidim that escaped, many of them with fake Polish passports, and they end up in a DP camp in Germany. My father was in the same DP camp. My father was left Russia as a baby with his parents. And this is where Hasidim were, in this DP camp. So she said, I think she was actually not in Pocking, where most of the Hasidim were. She was in a different, I think she was in Feldefang. You're in Feldefang, okay, but you were a baby. You wouldn't remember, right? So she said to me, I'm in the DP camp. I'm a single girl. I don't have anybody in my family. She found out later she had one uncle who survived. She said, mamash alone in the world. We can't even fathom this. A human being alone in the world. So she said to me, Fogestel tvei shiduchim. She said, I got an offer, she said, of two matches. No, she says, Einer is given a pelisha. Aber ich bin a harushisa. She says, one was a Polish guy, but I'm Russian. Huh?
A crime.
I don't know what crime, but she said, so I met him, I spoke to him. It's very nice. I'm a Pelisha. She's a Pelisha. He was much closer to my age. He was much closer to me in age, but he was a Pelisha. And then she said, Mitzvorgestel to Zayden. And my father-in-law's father didn't get married before the war. He was an older bacher. I think he was almost, so sure, over 30. Maybe he was closer to 40. And she said, Mitzvorgestel to Zayden. And he also had lost all his family. All his brothers and their children were all murdered in Lithuania. And she said, Elti Famir, I'll be a Rusha, sir. She was older than me, but he was Russian.
So I'm Russian. So I get married to the Russian instead of the Polish one. I'm like, wow, that's like, you know, I'm like a newly married chassan. I was married maybe a year or something then, maybe even a few months. I'm like, is anything else to the story, Bubby? Like, no, there's no maisha. That was the story.
She married him because he's her countryman.
She married him because he wasn't even from Russia. He's actually more Lithuanian. His family is more Lithuanian than Russian, but Lithuania, Russia is closer than. That was the extent of it. Like, that was, like, wow. Like, go tell this to kids today. Like, I think you're out of your mind. But you know what? She had a wonderful marriage. She had a wonderful marriage. And they loved each other very much. And they had a beautiful, warm home. And they raised children, all of whom are married and Baruch Hashem well adjusted. So I say that before I share with you the words of the Igera Shmuel. Now, I wanted to just share with you, like, this is a little bit of background. Igera Shmuel, okay, this is written about 500 years ago. If I remember, serves me correctly, in Tzfat. So Igera Shmuel was a, I think if my memory doesn't fail me, was a Spanish descent who ran away from the Inquisition and comes to Israel. He says, okay, so why would a woman not want to get married? You say, okay, I have a shidduch for you. What's the first concerns? Especially a widow, she feels vulnerable, she's alone, she doesn't have any relatives, right? She's a convert, all alone. What's her concerns? So she says, one concern is she doesn't want to marry down. Especially if she was married before to a very distinguished person, she doesn't marry down. So that's number one. And number two, she says she wants to know that he's kind. He's kind. So he's rich. Is he kind? Is he nice to me? Does he treat me nice? She feels vulnerable. She wants him to be nice. The Igera Shmuel says this is the two things that will be on her heart. Forget what will happen, making a decision, dating. Even to get introduced, these are the two fears. The two biggest fears. By the way, fears like this, you don't have to date somebody to allay these fears. That's why the shidduch system makes perfect sense. Why should you meet somebody who you don't know anything about and then get into a relationship and then start finding out, is there backing, is there a foundation for a relationship, or we have coming from such different places, we'll end up fighting anyway. So some people, you could definitely love them, you could fall in love, but you'll never be able to like each other. You'll never be able to live together. So the shidduch system said, okay, here's the background, here's the families, here's how they're raised, this is the value system, they could like each other. They can get along. Will they love each other? I don't know. Is the chemistry? Let them meet. It just makes sense. The shidduch system just makes sense. Anyway, so Naomi is busy making the case to Rus. So Naomi says to her, listen, now that we're at this point. So number one, Boyaz Maidaitanu. If he's Kreveinu, why did she say Maidaitanu? So I think there's a double meaning here. Maidaitanu means you know him. You know him. And he's our relative. So you're worried about marrying down? It's exactly the same. On the contrary, you're marrying up. It's your husband's first cousin. He's a little older, he's a first cousin. So you're marrying into the same family, you're staying in the same family. Whatever distinguished lineage, you love Machlon and you looked up to him. The lineage, he's our relative. It's not like introducing a new thing. That's number one. And number two, you know him. You've been in the field. You're with the maidens. What did you see about him? What did we notice about Boaz, if you remember? He was kind. He's kind. He's generous. He's a kind, generous man. So these are the two biggest fears that Ruth might have had as Naomi begins to make this gesture. Because Ruth never in a million years dreamed of marrying Boaz. It never even crossed her mind. It was like, this is impossible. Ruth, an unknown convert to join the Jewish people, marry the Rebbe of the Jewish people? It was a non-starter. She never imagined. She never thought of herself that way. So Naomi comes along and says, here's the things you might have. Before I introduce this to you, remember, he's a relative, so the level, you're not marrying down. Number two, you know he's kind, and you're with the girls, so you know this. The Al-Sheikh says, furthermore, that it could be that what was happening was that maybe Boaz wanted this too. Didn't you notice that he kind of set you up? These are the same girls who used to help his wife, his former wife, and now we had him. He's getting them used to you. So really, Naomi is making the case to Rus. And she's hoping Ruth says yes, because this is a little bit off the walls. This is really like, this plan is from another planet. But she's hoping, she's making the case as to why this is a good idea. This is the pshat. This is just pshat. But from pshat, I'm going to take you into the biggest issue over here. Okay, fine. So you say pshat like this, pshat like that. We figured out the pshat of the pasuk. We know the literal meaning of the pasuk. The Alshech so poetically addresses this whole issue. He says, before we go into details here, there's a klolus ha'inyan. There's just something about this whole story that must be understood. What's that? She says, Naomi was known as Kalilas Das. Kalilas Das means very, very balanced mind. Highly intelligent woman. She's a Yiras Hashem. She's a woman who's reverential. She's respectful towards Hashem. And if you're respectful towards Hashem, you're respectful to people also. She's Hatzna Leches. She was a person who was very discreet, very modest. And what was he suggesting to the daughter-in-law that she loved, that she called daughter, that she should act like a prostitute? She should come into a rich man's house and uncover his feet? Hi, maybe you want to hook up? Really? What is going on over here? And let's imagine for a minute, let's try to work this through. Let's try to play the chess pieces here. She comes in the middle of the night. She uncovers a guy's feet. He's 80 years old, by the way. He's a very wealthy man, very powerful man. And he's the kind of person who she knows will never walk even out in the street because there should never be any kind of suspicion. What would he do if he opens his eyes and he sees this girl who's all dressed up with no place to go next to him, uncovering his feet? What's his first reaction probably going to be? Who the heck? Sound the alarm. Watch people. I told you before to watch people. This is a rich man. Watchman. All I need is imagine what people are going to start saying over here. Some woman over here tried to come accost him in the night. He'll raise a hue and a cry. Who knows what will happen? The guards will come in. They might beat her, shame her, embarrass her. She could toss out like a common thief. This is like a disaster. This is a debacle waiting to happen. How could Naomi do that to Rus? How could you do that? How could you play with Rus's life like this? You make the biggest fool out of her, shame her in public, and who knows after she says she'll be alone. There was all kinds of unscrupulous people. You see, Boaz doesn't even trust his own workers. She could be raped, abused. I mean, this is some sugar in a plan. It doesn't make any sense. He says, the Alshech, it's a beautiful poetic language. It says, tell me, Hamadli Eid Shadchanim be Yisrael, were there no matchmakers in Israel? That you had to resort to such a ridiculous plan of telling her to get all dressed up and in the middle of the night go uncover his feet? You have an idea. Call a Shadchan. Say, hello, Mr. Shadchan. She could have spoken herself. You're uncomfortable yourself, so call somebody up. Hire somebody, ask somebody to do you a favor. Who does this? Why do this? The whole thing, mamish, doesn't make any sense whatsoever from beginning to the end. And so the Alshech tells us there was what we're going to call today an inconvenient truth. And the inconvenient truth that Naomi was certain that Rus is the one. And this is something that had been known in Jewish tradition, that from the children of Lot, those children that Lot had fathered with his daughters, that something special was supposed to happen. And the problem is that this truth is extremely inconvenient. And it's not going to fly. She's going to come, a shadchan will come to Boaz. Dear Rebbe, leader of the Jewish world, I have a shidduch for you. You know, your wife died. So he's an octogenarian, he's 80 years old, but still he's healthy and everything's fine and he shouldn't live alone. He doesn't want to have any chashad. It says if God forbid somebody's alone, it shouldn't be chashad. People shouldn't say things. It should get married. It's the halacha says it. Okay, fine. He's get married again. Who is the shidduch? It's a convert who showed up last week. I'm sorry, a few months ago. Oh, great. That sounds like a good shidduch. So what are you talking about? There is like a certain status. There's social. It's not going to happen. People just want a shidduch. Who's the yichus? Oh, this and this Rebbe's granddaughter, and that and this Rebbe's grandson, it's a shidduch. So what's the yichus? What's the lineage? Lineage has always been a minig yisrael. That's, in the Western world, they want to know how much money you have. Fine. So they make fun of the firm world. The firm world want to know what's your lineage. That's the currency. It's not any worse than money. Does it mean that there could be fine people who don't have lousy kids? history is full of stories of finest people who had lousy kids. Avraham had Yishmael, and then Yitzchak and Rifa had Esav, and Amalek came from there. True. But still, look for Yichas. Didn't they say the apple doesn't fall far from the tree? And there's this idea, Rachela Basa Rachela, which is the U will be like the U. E-W-E. And then it says that Ima Kach Brata, like mother, like daughter. So people say, who are the parents? So you come to the most prominent Jew of the time. He's an eligible, I won't call him a bachelor, but a suitor. And say, I have a shidduch. And I go like, really? Yeah, I don't think that's a shidduch for me. It was be a non-starter. This shidduch would never go anywhere. If you use the typical shidduch channels, if you would use the regular way, this would never, ever succeed. Naomi knows this because she's Klilas Das, because she's so intelligent, because she's Hatzna Lechas, because she's so discreet. She knows this can never work. She knows it's her cousin. She knows it's not. It's an impossibility. It's a non-starter. She knows this is a non-starter. She knows it's a non-starter, but there's an inconvenient truth here. What's the inconvenient truth? The inconvenient truth is that Rus was the one. She was the chosen one. She was the one who carried the spirit of Avraham Avinu. She was the one who carried the original spirit of the Redeemer of the Jewish people that was born through the very odd story of Lot and his daughters. Now, if you remember, in our previous class, I described to you in detail how they were not wicked or evil people. Those women did what they did l'shem shemayim. They actually thought that humanity was finished. They thought this was another great flood. They thought that for some reason, maybe there was chus of Avraham Avinu, that only Lot had been saved. And they said, they spoke to each other, the older daughter whose idea was, said, if we're not going to do something about this, that's not going to be capable for much longer, and that's it. We will be the last humans on the face of earth. And what about the mission of humanity? We have a responsibility. It's not discreet. It's not modest. It's necessary. So they did what they did l'shem shemayim. Did they do the right thing? That's not the question if they did the right thing here. Sometimes intentions do make a difference. And because they did, what was their ultimate goal? So it says that there was shnei praydes teves livnes mehemalchus beis David. The Medrash Rabba says on the words, let me first translate what I said and I'll come back. It says there were two good doves that were to come out from Lot through which the house of David HaMelech and the Mashiach would be built. Who are those two good doves? Rus, who is a Moavite, who comes from Moav. Moav is the son born to the elder daughter of Lot. And the second one is Naama HaAmonit. Naama is the royal consort, the queen, the wife of Shlomo HaMelech, who gives birth to Rehoboam, who is the king who reigns after Shlomo. And it is from Rehoboam's bloodline that all the kings of Yehuda come, including the tzaddikim like Chizkiyahu and Yeshayahu and Mashiach. So the house of David HaMelech had to be built through Ammon and Moab, Rus, to establish the bloodline of David HaMelech, from where Yishai would come, Ovid and Yishai, and then Naaman, from who would come, Rehoboam, and the royal bloodline from the children of David HaMelech. The Medrash Rabba says, V'nichya mi'avinu zera, we will, so to speak, get a live culture. We'll get seed from our father. The Medrash Rabba says in chapter 51, Hu Melech HaMashiach. That's talking about the redeemed, the king, the anointed king who will redeem humanity and the world. That this zera, oisei zera ha'asad lovay mimakim acher yi'al yadeinu. This zera that's going to come, it's going to come through our hands. They knew. They had a sense of destiny about them. They knew that the ultimate perfection and redemption of the world has to come through them. So what choice did they have? They said, there's no other man. Everybody's killed. We know that we're destined to give birth to greatness, to a seed that's going to save the world. We have no choice. We've got to do what we got to do. And then there's a pasuk that says, Matsasi David Avdi, I have found David my servant. You know what the Bereishis Rabba says in that a chapter earlier? Heichan Matzaiv, Matzasiv, where did you find him? No, finish the sentence for me. Where did you find David HaMelech? The Medrash says in Sodom. I found David HaMelech. in Sodom. Sodom doesn't exist anymore. How did you find David HaMelech in Sodom? So the answer is that Hashem arranged this whole business. Now, Naomi is convinced. Remember, she was not only brilliant and intelligent and reverential and discreet, she's also prophetically twinged. She's got infusion of higher consciousness. And she says, Rus is the one. This is the Prey de Teva. This is the one. And she says, clearly, Boaz, he's the man. He's the guy who's got a father. This is the bloodline. It was supposed to come from Elimelech. It transferred to Elimelech's family. It has to happen now. She knows it. But now, Naomi is walking with this inconvenient truth. But it's true. She's convinced it's true. But it's very inconvenient. So how do we make this inconvenient truth become a reality? This is the dilemma that Naomi faces. So Naomi comes up with this idea, says the Al-Sheikh, that she will try to replicate what the daughters of Lot did without doing anything graphic like that. And in doing so, she will hopefully get the message across to Boaz, now is the time. This is the woman. You have to make it happen. What did they do? The Al-Sheikh does a brilliant cross analysis of the psukim that describe Lot's daughters with Lot and Rus coming to Boaz. And she says the uncovering of the feet has a similar etymology to the words that are used to describe what Lot's daughters did. And when did they come to Lot? After he ate and drank. There was no drinking here, but there was eating. So there was sated. She tried to replicate the situation. Where was he? Alone in a cave. Middle of the night. Should you find him over there? Middle of the night. He'll be alone. Rus doesn't have to do anything crazy. Chas v'shalom. This has to be a normal marriage. Just uncover his feet. And she knows he knows how modest you are. After all, he introduced you to his young ladies. It's not like he doesn't know you. If a strange woman in the middle of the night uncover his feet, he'll go crazy. He knows who you are. She trusted that Boaz would have the mental capacity to compute things very quickly. To be woken up in the middle of the night and to put together the whole sweep of Jewish history and all the traditions we have, and to know that he was the bearer of the bloodline of the future Redeemer, and that eventually Malchus Yehuda was supposed to be built, and that from this will come redemption through it. She trusted that Boaz was intelligent enough, sharp enough, and clear enough that he would figure it out like this. So this was an unconventional way to go about it, because the truth was also unconventional and inconvenient. So she chooses inconvenient things to do, unconventional things to do. But she now is convinced, Naomi's convinced, that if this is to happen, if she's right, she says, it'll work out now. I'll arrange everything. If it doesn't work out, it wasn't meant to be. And she's basically telling Rus, you got to take the chance. You have to do this, because literally the future of the world is riding on your shoulders. And she says, it's not so far-fetched. He is our relative. Uncovering of the feet, as the Mefarshim tell us, brings to mind the concept of chalitza. Chalitza is when there's a woman whose husband died and didn't have any children, that there's supposed to be a levirate marriage, and the only way the levirate marriage is divided is if the shoe is removed. So she said, this is the hint. Uncover his feet. You'll be saying to him, if you think I'm not the one, if you think this is not to be, then at least you have an obligation to set me free. In other words, this what's suggestive, what does she touch? She doesn't touch anything. She uncovers his feet. All she's saying is, if so, then I got to get the shoe off your feet. Then set me free. If this is not to be, then set me free. And Naomi trusts that he's our relative. He'll understand. That's what she says of Atta. Now, at this point, Meidaitanu, he's our relative. That's the more important part. The Ger Shmuel says, he's a relative and you know him. Rashi says the relative. Because the main thing here is the relationship, the blood relation. It's not obligatory in the fullest sense. He's not actually a brother, but nonetheless, by extension, it's at least in the image of some kind of levirate concept. So she uncovers his feet. She says, if you go into the house, who are you? Rus had never been to the home, but Rus had been to the field many, many times. In fact, she was there every single day. So the Ashkel says it makes perfect sense she'll be in the field. And that's why the Pasuk says, it doesn't just say, Va'ata bayez medaitono. Asher ha'yisus na'arisav, you were there with him. I know that he's going to be dealing with the Zayda, so with the barley. I know he's going to be in a good mood. I know he's going to be alone tonight. So what's the worst thing? Boaz will understand and say, Rus, please, please, please leave. This is not appropriate. It's not to be.
She has a sense, Naomi has a sense, that Boaz will not wake up disoriented. He will have enough presence of mind to figure out exactly what's going on here and to make a decision. And Naomi says at that point, it's no longer in my hands. I did my part. So like, if, what happens if you're walking around with an inconvenient truth? You have to do your part. You finish doing your part, that's it. I put it now into the hands of Boaz. I've done what I could do. And that's how the pasuk unfolds. So, now, Boaz, my son, he's our relative. You're going to hold this dude. It won't look strange because Asher Yisus not Yisuf. He's there at night. You'll never have another time to confront him. And that's why this daring plan is the only option to be able to possibly realize the vision that Naomi has. And in fact, as the Alshach says, Naomi is not 1,000% certain, but she's pretty certain. And the only way to find out whether she's right or not is to set everything up, set up the situation, and see what happens.
How much did Ruth know?
How much did Ruth know? Not so much, mm-hmm. But she trusted her mother-in-law. Trusted and knew that her mother loved her. And this explains, puts the whole picture together. Now you understand the pshat of Pasuk Beis, but you also understand the deeper history, the sweep of history, the deeper meaning, and the rationale behind this very unusual and strange plan that's put into place. And we'll soon see now exactly the details. So in the next verse, we talk about the details. She gets anointed and bejeweled and gets dressed up. And why is the verse telling us that? What is the meaning of that? So Bezrat Hashem, in the next class, we'll go through the details of how Naomi advises Rus to make sure that this plan is as successful as it could be. B'chaim.